This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009 and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
I'm not here around this week,
but
you may be, but I'm
not. You're hungry? Hey, Ma, bring us some meatloaf.
You're insane. You're absolutely insane.
My palate.
My
palate
isn't even a stain spread. Are you telling me?
I don't know what we're yelling about.
Now, if you don't think this is the greatest, I will fight you. That's no lie.
Can you clap for the killers?
All right, let's rock.
Give it up for them gangsters.
Throw off that.
One time for the killers. Double up for them gangsters.
Just live in the dream.
I have been wanting to get along with the Chicago Bulls.
I gotta be honest,
Hey, Fred.
Hey, NBA historian, basketball historian Tim Gallagher joins the Chicago Bullseye. Tim, I hope you're doing well. How are things going?
It's going well, Fred. It's a beautiful winter day here in San Diego, and about 70 degrees, so can't complain too much about that. But, and then, you know, just still digesting that Golden State Warrior performance against the Bulls. That was a clinic, and we'll obviously dig into that in more detail. So, disappointing in a way for the Bulls, but they're certainly not alone in getting spanked by the Warriors.
No, the Warriors just beat, you know, arguably the two best teams possibly in the East, in the Bulls and the Cavs. I think they beat the Cavs by 34 and the Bulls by 31. So, you know, just absolute destruction of two of the better teams in the East. I'd like to get your thoughts about last night's game. You know, obviously very disappointing loss. But at some level, I'm just like, well, you know, Gasol had his worst game since 2002. We were 1-20 from the three-point line. You know, it just wasn't – it's one of the – Mama said there'll be days like this. You know, it's one of those nights where you just don't have your A game. I'm not saying the Bulls are better than Golden State, but I don't think it should be a measure of this team to say how atrocious and how awful we are. It just was one of those nights.
Right. Well, and I think over the course of the season, as we talked about, you know, that game last night and the Charlotte game, where I think were the only two games where the Bulls just were awful, right? And so, you know, it's still hard to say about where the Bulls had that bad of a night and or is Golden State that good. But, you know, I think you can't really measure the Bulls or any other team against the Warriors and Spurs because the Warriors and Spurs are just so superior. And, you know, the way that game played out last night, and I went back and watched the first quarter because, you know, the Bulls, you know, obviously have a strong first half from Rose and, you know, a fairly decent start to the game, and we're playing them even and about 5 minutes left to go in the first quarter. And I watched back, you know, I ran it back a few times just to see how it slipped away, right? From it went from them being in the game to, you know, maybe down a couple of points, you know, 3 to 5 points to Golden State up by 12 and by 15, you know, just out of nowhere, it almost seemed. And so I think that's the way the Warriors just relentlessly pursue the game. And, you know, just a couple of thoughts about the Warriors, and then we'll talk about the Bulls too, obviously. But, you know, the fact that they are one of the elite teams in history, right? You're seeing things beyond just the win streaks and the streaks to start the season and the margins of victory and things like that. So, you know, that's all very legitimate. And just the joy they seem to have playing together and the team spirit. You know, so I was really studying guys off the ball. Like Klay Thompson, you could just see away from the play when there'd be a great pass from Curry to Bogut or something, that there's Klay Thompson totally away from the play, pumping his fist, just how excited he was for his teammates. And just that combination of players understanding their roles, sharing the ball, their great outside shooter, really other than Bogut and Azeli, all those guys are threats from the point line. And then that sets up a lot of their back cuts. You know, there's not many teams you see shred the Bulls or other teams with those back cuts or cuts to the basket. And that's all set up by their great outside shooting. But the other thing is just their relentless approach. I mean, Bogut and Green are after every rebound, right? And they just are just something to behold with their effort and energy. And, you know, I was thinking a lot about Bogut and what a steal that was getting him from Monte Ellis, right? I mean, Monte Ellis is a good player in the league and, you know, played well at Dallas and now he's with the Pacers. But to get a rim protector like Bogut, you know, an ambidextrous giant that's a former number one overall pick, and what a steal, right? That's probably Jerry West and Bob Myers, another, you know, brilliant move to get Bogut into that lineup and the mix with those other guys.
So, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, as a fan, you just kind of have to savor how good they're playing, right? You hate to have it happen at the expense of your team, you know, the team you follow, like the Bulls or whoever it may be. But there's another side of it. This is just beautiful basketball, you know, free flowing, good shooting. And then when Curry starts coming up with left-handed dunks and things that, you know, what's he going to do for an encore, right? Just when you think you've seen him at all, here he gets in the lane, gets a step and throws down a left-handed dunk, which I don't know how many left-handed dunks he's had in his career, probably not many, if any. So, because he doesn't even dunk that often. So the fact that he's able to pull more tricks out of the hat, it's just something to behold.
It's just it's the epitome of the power of the three-point shot. I mean, it's a culmination of that shot is what you find with Golden State. And I always kind of felt this way when Korver was on the team. The Bulls would have these mini runs just in two possessions where Korver would hit back-to-back threes. And a four-point lead goes to double digits like that, you know, 4-10. You saw that in the third quarter. I think Curry hit a three. Bulls miss. Next possession, Klay Thompson hit a three. And, you know, a six-point run in literally 24 to 30 seconds is just because of that three-point shot makes all the difference in the world. And then all the lanes open and you get the, you know, it just seems like it just opens up everything because you just have to guard these guys so far out. There's no way you can have a great defense. You know, it's almost when you're guarding 35, 30 feet out, it really affects the quality of what you can bring defensively unless you have super athletic and super fast players, which the Bulls don't have. And I agree with your comments on Bogut, too. But, again, they're also so versatile that you don't – even when Bogut's off the floor, they can put up a lineup that's just very athletic, very long, and very good. So just an incredible team. And I think the Bulls eventually want to approach that. They just don't have the personnel. They don't have enough good shooting, or they don't utilize it enough. And part of my next topic I wanted to go in, I don't know if you feel this way about Aaron Brooks. I can tell within three possessions if Aaron Brooks is going to have a good night or not. It's unbelievable.
Right.
Sometimes a guy just comes out and scores and the guy's playing fantastic. But last night was another version, which he's just going to suck. I mean, he almost injures Rose, which is bad enough. Number one, he goes 1-for-4 from the field, shooting up, you know, 30-foot shots, just showing poor shot selection. The guy can be a maddening player, but I guess that's what you expect when he's your third point guard.
Right. Well, and like you said, though, you're hopeful the coaches have that same intuition that you do, right? So is this going to be his night? Let's see how he does on his first few possessions. Does he hit his first shot or two? And if not, let's try something different. So hopefully that coaching staff is watching that and in tune with that. So you saw last night with Barbosa, so that, you know, he's kind of the spark with Golden State, similar to how I would say the Bulls use Brooks, right? So, and, you know, Barbosa was on last night, so they rode him for a while, and they could. So you're right. You would hope that if it's not his night and they're aware of that, let's try something different. And overall, the Bulls did have a tough shooting night. And, again, I don't know if that's the credit to Golden State. Like we said, there's really, other than Barbosa and Curry, who are smaller guys, you've got that whole wave of those hybrid players, like we've talked about in past podcasts, where you know, Iguodala, Harrison Barnes, Draymond Green, Sean Livingston off the bench, you know, that are very versatile, long, athletic guys and can play, you know, Tony Snell-type bodies and length, but more skilled than Tony Snell, all of them. Right? So,
I thought it was interesting, too, when Livingston, you know, basically in the second quarter just said the Bulls had Brooks on him, and he said, well, we'll just scrap the offense and go to post. We're going to post Livingston on Brooks and just abuse him until you know, the Bulls counter, and that's exactly what happened. It's so interesting to see a team recognize it and take advantage of it. Something I get frustrated that the Bulls don't do enough of, you know, like when you do have a matchup where Gasol should be destroying somebody in the post, it's still, hey, it's Jimmy's turn or it's Derek's turn. You know, it's like they don't, it's not a very, the Bulls are definitely not as selfless as Golden State is, right? Golden State saw that, took advantage of it, and kept on going to it until the Bulls responded.
Right. Yep, exactly. And, you know, and Golden State's obviously, you know, they master those kind of matchups and exploit that. And I watched last night when they had those mismatches, right, when somebody smaller was on Draymond Green or somebody smaller had switched to Bogut, and they're on it in terms of how quickly the ball moves and they recognize it. So the other thing with Golden State is the pace at which they execute and recognize those kind of things. That, you know, that's the other thing that's so impressive. Not only do they see it and recognize it, but they're doing it. The ball's just zipping around the court. You know, the shots are going up quickly, and just the positive energy that they play with is really something. And we talked about it in a recent podcast, though. Those waves of, you know, the lead goes from 6 to 10 or 12 in a snap. That's where I think Popovich is one of the few that, you know, it probably has even a better intuition than most coaches at putting a stop to that. You know, it's tough to do, especially, you know, like I said, it was almost subtle how that lead went from 4 or 5 up to 12 to 14. You know, it wasn't that many possessions, or it wasn't one highlight play that did it. Just all of a sudden it went from the Bulls kind of hanging with them, and this game could go either way. Derek's hitting some shots. And Jimmy hasn't gotten going yet, and the Bulls are still right there. And then all of a sudden, wow, this is getting out of hand.
Right. So it seems like there clearly is a movement to this type of Golden State and Spurs, I think, run a similar type of offense, which is, features a lot of ball movement, focus on a three-point shot, corner threes. Atlanta Hawks also have that same type of quote-unquote formula with Coach Bud. Could you go a little bit into the history of Coach Bud and the players in the Atlanta Hawks and how they kind of developed through those systems?
Sure. And the Hawks are one of those teams that's, you know, kind of in a way like the Spurs behind Golden State. They're kind of lurking in the shadows in the East. And, you know, and granted, they kind of flamed out in the playoffs last year. And I think it was a combination of injuries and maybe they just ran out of gas. And they don't have that top 10 in the league superstar player like the other teams that are ahead of them. However, you know, I saw something on Real GM where, in terms of offensive and defensive efficiency, the Hawks are among the top 5 teams in the league. So they're, you know, very efficient in how they play. Of course, Coach Budenholzer was a longtime assistant under Popovich and, you know, was there, I think, 15-plus years. But the other thing with Atlanta is, you know, they were on later last night against Portland, and kind of as a poor man's version of what Golden State does, I saw Atlanta do in terms of just that ball movement and team spirit and execution. And so the fact that the Hawks have some pieces, Budenholzer obviously learned the Spurs way. They picked up Splitter this year, who's played on, you know, championship Spurs teams and has been in that system. The other thing is even a couple of Atlanta's role players, so Kent Bazemore, who's become a very effective role player in the league and a real athletic and talented guy, and even one of their end-of-the-bench guys, Justin Holiday, was with Golden State last year when they won. So I don't think it's a coincidence that they have both the coaching and players that have been in those systems. And again, maybe they're not their star players, but they've seen the Spurs way or the Warriors way and bringing that culture to the Hawks, because you watch the Hawks and there is a lot of wonderful ball movement and team spirit and, you know, and some talented players, although again, not at the Warriors or Spurs level of talent. But you know, you've got very, very good players like Horford and Korver and Teague and, you know, and I like the way they play. So that system, is working pretty effectively for Atlanta. You know, again, I don't know, in relation to Cleveland, if they have the firepower of a Cleveland, or even, you know, Toronto is now kind of looks like they're really putting it together as well. Now that Valanciunas has been healthy and they're kind of establishing themselves a little bit in the East. But I like that Hawks system and the way they go about things.
I think Fred's probably trying to instill something here in Chicago, although he's going to have a much greater challenge because we have some ball stoppers on this team. I know Jimmy's fantastic player, but man, does he really like to slow down the movement sometimes with getting the ball and, you know, preferring to take it one-on-one. Aaron Brooks is definitely not in the mold of what I would say is a Fred type of guy. Taj Gibson isn't. Taj Gibson, I constantly am frustrated with his inability to pass out of the post or pass out of a double team. You know, sometimes he's not very quick, let's say, with moving the ball. And, you know, I guess this team really, there probably will have to be some changes in the offseason to hopefully get those kind of players more in tune with. I'm not saying Jimmy would be a guy to go. Obviously, he's a building block. And then hopefully he'll be able to, once we get the personnel, you know, find that ability to move it a little quicker. But Taj might be a guy who has to go because there's a couple guys in this team that really don't think thrive in that kind of system.
Right. Well, and I know Gasol had an off night last night, but boy, up until then, he's had some really great games. And I know you talked on the last podcast about how well he executed the pick and roll against Detroit with Rose. And so again, holding the measuring stick against Golden State is, you know, no one's going to look good. Except maybe San Antonio at this point in the season. So I think the Bulls just have to put that one behind them and just be ready every night. And like we talked about recently, that Philly game was a tough game, and Philly won again last night, and they're playing better. And so really, the parity that we've talked about is really, really true.
What about Jimmy Butler? Back to Jimmy. You know, obviously he played incredible in the second half, had a rough first half. There's been a lot of discussion on, you know, we haven't really had a podcast since this 50-plus outburst against Philly, and he follows it up with a four-pointer. And it led to a discussion on another show I was on, the Ball Show, about whether or not, where would you rank Jimmy Butler in the NBA? If he had, you know, maybe 20 guys at a park and you're picking teams, where would he come on your list?
Yes, well, you know, I've ranked my top 10, and I can kind of run through those really quickly. So and the reason I would do that, and I'll zip through those names, but I think he's in kind of the next wave of guys, you know, beyond the top 10 or 11 guys in the league. And, you know, obviously this will be some debate, but you know, this is roughly my top 10 players in the league right now in this order. So I'll go with Steph number one, LeBron number two, Kawhi Leonard third, Anthony Davis fourth, Durant fifth, Westbrook sixth, Chris Paul seventh, Blake Griffin eighth, Harden ninth. At 10, I was kind of torn between either Carmelo, who's been playing better, and the Knicks have been playing better, or Marc Gasol. So essentially, those are my top 10 in the league. And sure, you could make an argument where a guy could be slotted a little higher or lower in that group. But I really think those are the franchise kind of guys, as I see it in the league. Then beyond that, though, there's a whole wave of really, really good young players. And I put Jimmy in that group. And when I'm thinking of the rest of that group, I'm thinking of players like DeMar DeRozan, Klay Thompson, Paul George. So kind of in that next wave, I see Jimmy, you know, he hasn't maybe put together quite as many good seasons as those couple of names I just mentioned. You know, DeRozan is kind of taken his game to another level, it looks like. We've obviously seen what Klay Thompson can do. You know, and Paul George has made a great comeback from his injury. So I see him in, you know, as a top 20 player in the league for sure. I haven't ranked that, you know, that next 10, but he's definitely in the mix. And, you know, again, I think it just has to, we just have to see a little more consistency, right? Where I know that 50-point effort against Philadelphia where he almost single-handedly won that game, that, you know, that's going to take something out of you, right? So to have a Jordan-esque game the next game, and, you know, things like this really make you appreciate where Jordan night after night, you know, was putting up, you know, at least 20 to 30, right? There weren't any below double figure games or, okay, he didn't have it tonight. I mean, even the nights he didn't have it, you know, it was a 20 plus point game typically, right? So just whatever it takes to get that level of consistency, and that's going to, mean his teammates stepping up too. That means Rose is going to have to play like he played in the first half last night and play that consistently. And it looks like his game is really coming on. I know a couple of podcasts ago we were really concerned and critical about, you know, is he going to get it back? But it looks like there's some improvement there. So I'm encouraged, despite the Noah injury, that Rose seems like on the rise a little bit. And then if we get some of these other pieces going, but again, that number three or four spot in the East should be pretty achievable, and number two, maybe not impossible, but they're going to have to play their best to get there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, so to wrap up the show, I'd like to go over some names that unfortunately have passed on, some great NBA names. Let's first start out with Johnny Bock, who's obviously a fixture, a coach on those first three title-winning teams for Chicago Bulls. And, you know, I've been really enjoying reading some of the thoughts and the remembrances from, you know, former coaches who worked with him, former players. Horace Grant had some fantastic things to say about Johnny. So did Michael Jordan. So did, I think Doug Collins attended the funeral yesterday. You know, some big names were in attendance. Steve Kerr went to the funeral along with his coaching staff. Really, you know, pretty interesting stuff, I thought. Have you ever met Johnny Bock? What's your opinion of him?
Well, I've only crossed paths with him at summer leagues and, you know, years ago, you know, seeing him in terms of his Bulls coaching capacity, or maybe after a game waiting for John Paxson, you know, to say hello to him or something, and seen him then. But we could almost spend a whole podcast on Johnny Bock and his life history. And, you know, they kind of don't make guys like this anymore. You know, he's a World War II veteran. And you know, how many guys can you think of that, you know, that Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan look to as a mentor, right? Maybe Tex Winter. There's not many names, right? And Phil Jackson also wrote some really wonderful things about Johnny Bock and just his life. And again, the listeners should really dig in and read more about some of his history. But a couple of things I thought were exceptional. And one, he was an assistant coach on that 72 Olympic team that had that heartbreaking loss to the Russians, where Doug Collins hit those two clutch free throws, which I'll put that up as a challenge. If there's ever been two more clutch free throws made in the history of basketball, I'd like to see him when Doug Collins was undercut, going to the basket, stepped to the line with the U.S. down one against the Russians and made two free throws, you know, just money in Munich. But Johnny Bock was an assistant to Hank Iba on that team. So that was probably the origin of Doug Collins and Johnny Bock getting to know one another. And then when Doug Collins became the coach of the Bulls, he brought Johnny Bock on. Yeah,
never
brought
knew
Johnny
that.
Bock on. Yeah, Bock
yeah,
Collins
and,
to his
and
staff.
If any of the listeners, just for the listeners, if anybody wants to hear how any U.S. look, there's never been a U.S. Olympic team more screwed in a game by referees than the 72 Olympic team. You can read up that history offline. It's just unbelievable story. And I think to this day, nobody on that Olympic team has accepted the silver medal because of what happened there. So, sorry to interrupt
right.
the story. But let's go on.
Right.
So that's interesting.
Yeah,
did not
John
know
Bock
that.
was an assistant coach to Hank Iba on that team. And so the other couple of things I read, and as I was refreshing, you know, Johnny Bock's history, and I first became aware of him when he was coaching at Penn State in the 70s. But prior to that, he was an NBA Pioneer era player just for a couple of years. And again, in those early days of the NBA, I'm talking 1948, 1950 time frame, you know, it wasn't a very attractive lifestyle to play in the NBA, and you didn't know if your paycheck was going to come and how solid the franchises were. So it wasn't a real attractive lifestyle, even if you loved the game. And so a lot of players had short-lived careers, either due to financial reasons and wanted to have a more, you know, stable career, or moved into coaching. And that's what Johnny Bock did, is and became the head coach at a very young age of Fordham. And I read that Fordham's freshman football coach during that time was Vince Lombardi. So this is in the early 50s. So it said that Johnny Bock and Vince Lombardi were friends and rubbed shoulders in Bock's early coaching days at Fordham. And then also one of his childhood friends in the Bronx in New York was Joe Paterno. So you talk about coaching legends and people that Johnny had rubbed shoulders with. And that obviously wasn't lost on people like Doug Collins and Phil Jackson, who had him on their staffs later in Johnny's career. One other quick sidelight of another NBA Pioneer era player that passed away not long ago was a gentleman by the name of Mac Otten, who was an All-American at Bowling Green and played for the Tri-Cities Blackhawks, where his coach was Red Auerbach, and also the St. Louis Bombers. And I just bring up Mack Otten in special reverence because he lived on the street I grew up on. So Mack and his wife and family, he had a bunch of boys and a daughter, lived on the same street I did in Centerville, Ohio, growing up. So Mack was it was an honor to have a Bowling Green College All-American legend and a Pioneer era NBA player that lived on my street. And knowing people like him at an early age for me really fueled my interest in the history of the game. And he played during the same couple of years that Johnny Bock did, coincidentally. And Mack Sr. just passed away at age 90 in recent weeks. So
did
just
you
wanted to put
the
a quick
the Tri-City Blackhawks was the name of the team he played on?
Exactly. And
what did they become?
Which is now the Atlanta Hawks.
Get so, out of the Tri-City Blackhawks. Where's Tri-City at?
Well, I think that was sort of in your neck of the woods there in Illinois. I think it was, what is it, Moline? I don't know what the Tri-Cities are off the top of my head.
Oh, my God. That's right. Yeah. So like Western Illinois type of almost into Iowa. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think what Des Moines and Moline and I should know my geography a little better of what the Tri-Cities were. But, yeah, the franchise then moved to Milwaukee, where they were the Milwaukee Hawks, then the St. Louis Hawks, and now they're the Atlanta Hawks, who we were just talking about earlier in the podcast. So,
wow.
Yeah, some of the family trees of these franchises are pretty interesting. And I had talked to Mr. Otten, obviously, when he mentioned, well, Red Auerbach was my coach at Tri-Cities, and he talked about when he got picked up by Tri-Cities, Red Auerbach came to the train station and picked him up in his car. And, you know, long before Red Auerbach was the cigar-smoking legend we know of now from the Celtics days.
Great story. Great story.
Mack Otten was a contemporary of Johnny Bock, and, you know, they both have just recently passed.
You mentioned another one, former Sonics star J.J. Johnson. I'd like to hear a little bit about him.
Sure. Yeah, and John Johnson recently passed away. I know we try to remember some of the legends of the game. And John Johnson is significant for a couple things. One, he was a great Big Ten player at the University of Iowa and then played in the NBA for a couple of teams. He was a couple-time All-Star, was one of the original Cleveland Cavs, or very early in the Cavs franchise. But really became most known when he played later in his career for the Seattle Supersonics and the Sonics teams that went to the finals back-to-back, coached by Lenny Wilkins, and people certainly know of Dennis Johnson. We've talked about him in past podcasts, and Gus Williams, Jack Sikma. But John Johnson was kind of a glue guy, almost in a Draymond Green-type way. So he was known as the first point forward. So even having those great guards like Gus Williams and Dennis Johnson and downtown Freddie Brown, the Sonics often ran their offense through John Johnson. So he's a great passer. You know, again, one of those guys who did everything well. He wasn't a superstar at any one thing, but was just a great all-around basketball player. And Lenny Wilkins entrusted him enough that he became known as the first point forward before that term was really even used. And had a wonderful NBA career and capped it off with that championship with the Sonics. And then, again, he had some Midwestern ties being from the Milwaukee area and playing in the Big Ten at Iowa. So wanted to acknowledge him as well. And there's some good YouTube clips of J.J. in action. And I know there was one playoff clip I saw against Milwaukee where I think he only had 8 or 10 points, but they showed some of the great passes he made and just a real facilitator on the floor.
Oh, it's always enjoyable to reminisce about some of these players and to hear their histories. Can't thank you enough for joining the Bullseye, Tim. All the best to you until next time. And we're looking forward. It's going to be a little bit of a tough stretch for the Bulls coming in the next couple games. I think they have the Cavs coming up, Boston coming up, all pretty decent teams. Hopefully they can have a nice stretch here and win a few of these. And until next time when we touch base, probably early next week.
Well, sounds great, Fred. Thanks. Always a pleasure. And we'll talk again soon.
All the best, Tim. Talk to you soon, brother.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.